inhumane. It is really fundamentally un-American.
No war!
Trump war!
No war!
Trump war!
No war!
Trump war!
No war!
Broadcasting from the Gulag city of planet Earth, this is Cultural Baggage. I'm Dean Becker. Steve Nolan is our engineer. After our interview, we'll name the Cultural Baggage Coward or Hero of the Week. But first, let's bring in our guest for the evening, Representative Ron Paul. Congressman Paul.
Yes.
Thank you, sir, for joining us. Welcome to Cultural Baggage.
Delighted to be with you.
You know, there's so much news that seems to be breaking. I mean, our show deals pretty much exclusively with the drug war. We dabble in the war on terror a bit, but it seems to be breaking strongly in Congress. Though we didn't win that debate a couple of weeks back, the Rohrabacher bill.
Right.
152 U.S. congressmen stood up for the rights of medical marijuana patients, and I was proud of that moment.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's amazing we even got it to a vote, which is something new for us.
There's so much that I think hinges on privacy, and the Lawrence Act here in Houston seemed to bring that to a focal point, if you will. And even now, Justice Kennedy is talking about, he says, our resources are misspent, our punishments too severe, our sentences too long. Your thoughts on that, sir?
Yeah, at the same time, we have our Attorney General, Ashcroft, going out trying to nitpick and find out and get reports on judges who might not be throwing the book at somebody that smoked a joint. So you have two things going on there. I think the country is waking up. I think we're going to win that argument. But we have a long way to go when we have to deal with people like Ashcroft.
You bet. One of my former guests, Judge James P. Gray, called Mr. Ashcroft the most dangerous man in America.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned both the drug war and the war on terrorism. You're more interested in the war on drugs. But, you know, in many ways, they're very similar. And, of course, Ashcroft is involved in both. And they are the same. They provide the same kind of danger. And I wouldn't be surprised if the motivation for both might not be the same. And that is, yes, it's convenient to have a war on drugs because that way they can make an excuse for doing so many of these snooping type of things that they do. And terrorism just gives them another excuse. I sort of believe that they'd like to just know more about every American citizen to make sure they know about our finances in case the tax revenues drop off and they think somebody's cheating a little bit. I think it's probably motivated more by taxes than by a sincere effort to do anything about the drug problem or you know, really be concerned about terrorists.
Even though we did get the 152 votes in that Rohrabacher bill, there were, I think, 273 or 5 congressmen who wanted to maintain this jihad on pot smokers. Time Magazine, Zogby, all kinds of people have done polls of late to determine how Americans think about marijuana, in particular medical marijuana. Just this past Monday, I think it was, CNN's Lou Dobbs show did a poll, and they found that 93% of the people were for decriminalizing marijuana.
Wow, that's pretty high. I think we're making progress on it. I've always maintained for years that this nation will probably wake up and realize that prohibition of drug usage hasn't been any more successful than prohibition against alcohol. And I think we have to recognize that almost any substance, and alcohol, even though it's legal to drink it, is a very dangerous substance, just as many drugs are, legal and illegal. But the approach of having this drug war and criminalizing everything and throwing people in jail and creating prices to skyrocket, it's actually, you know, about the nuttiest thing we've done since prohibition.
I understand that there's a new drug czar now, Miss Karen Tandy, who has she actually stated that she was not personally familiar with the Institute of Medicine report. You know,
and compassion. Who was it that said that?
Karen Tandy.
Uh-huh.
She's just been nominated and I think endorsed by the Senate to become the new drug czar.
Oh yeah.
And
no, and I knew Asa Hutchinson real well. He was in the Congress with me, and I've actually been on the same panel with him debating this issue.
Yes, sir.
Issue. And he's a sincere guy, but he's sincerely wrong, you know. And he thinks he's doing the Lord's work by promoting his view. And it's a matter of education. And eventually, though, I think the judges and some of our good policemen and others will, you know, finally prevail and say, you know, why are we doing this? Why are we creating so many problems for ourselves? And yet, right now, it continues. But I think, I really do, I think if we look on the positive side, we are definitely making some progress.
Yes, sir. I agree. There's a gentleman up in Canada. He calls himself the Prince of Pot. His name's Mark Emery. And he's actually making a tour of the major cities smoking pot in front of the police stations to validate the fact that they have no pot law up there at this time.
Where? In Canada?
Canada. Yes, sir.
They have none at all, huh?
Well, in Ontario, certainly. No, sir. It does not exist.
Huh.
And he gets arrested in some cities, but they let him go because they're not sure if they should be. You know, it's they feel that they've just got to stop such behavior.
Well, tell all the conservatives that none of the laws were passed until Roosevelt. Roosevelt was the one that started on marijuana. So most of our history, nobody cared who did what when it came to marijuana.
Yeah.
1938, I believe it was. And even then they realized that they couldn't ban it. They figured that all they could do is tax it. If they wanted to ban it, they would have to amend the Constitution like they did for alcohol. But we have so little respect for the principle of the rule of law and the Constitution and states' rights that, you know, now all we have to do is Congress pass a law or courts rule a certain way and it becomes the law of the land, whether it was proper or not.
There's a grand seizure, if you will, going on around this nation where police departments try to find people who have luxury vehicles or property or money that they can seize if they can find a little bit of drugs. And your thoughts on that forfeiture situation?
Well, you know, that started, some of the forfeiture laws started in the 80s, in the early 80s, the really bad ones. And I can remember one of my last votes that I cast before I left Congress, my first tour, which was in 84. There was a bill passed that introduced this whole notion of forfeiture, and that the property would be guilty, and if you had your land or your car or your airplane taken, it was your job to prove yourself innocent. I, of course, voted against that, but it's been gradually getting worse ever since. And, of course, with the Patriot Act, you know, it's just a continuation of this. So whether you're interested in the drug issue or other things, we're really dealing with the same issue. It's the violation of the civil liberties of all Americans and the ability for our government to come into our homes and our businesses now without search warrants and without knocking on the door and leaving any messages at all. And, of course, if you object, you know, they'll say, well, you're for terrorism. Or if you object, you mean you're for these druggies and these drug dealers? So that's why our vote wasn't stronger. I think we had a lot of support in the House. They were just scared to death to go home and have to explain to them, no, I'm not for the wild use of drugs, and I'm not favoring terrorism or anything else, but I just think we ought to follow the Constitution when it comes to search and seizure and following the law.
It is turned upside down at times, it seems. The Bush administration's top lawyer on medical marijuana told a lawyers convention Saturday that if California were allowed to defy federal drug laws, other states could ignore federal civil rights laws. I smell hypocrisy there, but I wanted to hear your take on that.
Well, I'm such a strict state writer that I think the government should butt out of all law enforcement.
Yeah.
And I would have solved, you know, the issue of segregation and that whole problem there of conflict a lot differently. Matter of fact, the problem is not solved. There's as much conflict with the races now as ever before, so I don't think the feds have solved the problems. But I believe in the old-fashioned approach of boycott, some of the things that the people did in the civil rights movement, including Martin Luther King, and it was the use of boycotts and say, look, if you don't treat us right, we're not going to treat you, and we're not going to buy your goods and services. And so I would say that he's exactly right. They believe in a strong authoritarian government. So when it comes to affirmative action or integration of schools or use of certain drugs or whatever, they in one way are consistent. They want the total control to be at the federal level, and they want them to have the federal police force, and they want the attorney general to be able to override all state laws. So if you're willing to say that about marijuana and other things, you have to be willing to say that these other problems should be left to the states as well.
Here over the past couple of weeks, we've had a couple of two-hour midday shows where we have discussed the racial implications of this drug war. And a couple of my guests have gone so far as to say that it is a perpetuation of white supremacy, that it is very much akin to slavery. And I was wondering what your response was.
I don't know whether I use the same words, but it's obviously biased against the minorities. They get much tougher penalties, and even the way the laws are written. You know, if you're a white individual and you use cocaine in the suburbs, the odds of you going to prison are slim to none. If you're black and poor and in the inner city, you're going to get the book thrown at you. And for that reason, I think all minorities ought to wake up to this and realize that the libertarian constitutional approach to this issue is a much better way to handle it. And I think to some degree that's happening, but still there are many in that camp who would argue that these laws are there to protect themselves.
Here in Houston, I cannot get our former drug czar, the mayor, to come on the show. You know, he's right here in town, and he can't find the time.
Yeah, and sort of like the gun issue, too. If you're worrying about helping everybody, libertarian sees it as everybody's equal. They're an individual, and you can't see the color of their skin or know anything else about them. But just think how the gun laws have been biased against the poor black inner-city occupant. I mean, they're not allowed to defend themselves. Now, if you're white and you live in the suburbs and you hire somebody to protect you and you have a gun in your house, you're a lot safer than you are in the inner city. You ought to look at D.C., the strictest gun laws in the world. That's where the most violence and crimes are, black on black. And if they'd be permitted to own some guns, maybe they would be better protected, because there's no way the police can protect everybody in the inner city. And, you know, interestingly enough, there was a proposal made just recently in D.C. to lighten up on some of these very, very strict gun laws, because they're starting to see that they're biased against minorities.
I have some friends who live in Nigeria, and after they do a tour of duty in the States, they actually have to negotiate with the bandits back home to settle up, you know, for what they made in the States. And
wow.
They negotiate a deal and pay them at the front door. Otherwise, they come in with guns because the citizens can't own them.
And those are the people who are in charge. They're the legal people, huh?
Yes, sir. There's a situation I'm aware of. I think it's in North Carolina, where the state legislators are drafting bills that would make the manufacturer of drugs a narco-terrorism crime. And it ties in with what you were saying, that Ashcroft wants to watch over every aspect of our lives. And I was wondering what you think of that effect. I mean, that they're actually doing it, that if you manufacture methamphetamine, you can be called a terrorist.
Yeah, and that's just totally absurd. You know, first it was tobacco. If you manufacture tobacco, and everybody knows tobacco is bad, and you smoke it and you get sick, you're supposed to sue the tobacco manufacturer. Now they're going after the gun manufacturers. And years ago, I said, yeah, this is so stupid. Probably someday they're going to go after McDonald's. And lo and behold, there are people who think they should go after McDonald's.
Yes.
So whether the time you go after somebody is when they are fraudulent or they give you a defective product, but they give you something that you know what it is. I mean, you know that guns can hurt people and they're dangerous, and you have to watch them. But if a person uses it illegally or in the wrong manner, I mean, that company can't be liable. Now, if something malfunctions and they're claiming something about a product, whether it's a drug or what, and they say, oh, this is perfectly safe, you can drink 5 gallons of alcohol and this alcohol won't make you drunk, well, that's lying, you know, and
yes,
they should be responsible for that. Otherwise, the individual is responsible for his own acts, and that's what we've gotten away from. The individual no longer is responsible, and they're dependent on the government. They're not responsible for what they do, and if they don't do much to take care of themselves, they expect the government to take care of them.
Some of the ramifications of getting caught with even a minor amount of drugs, I mean, it mounts up so quickly. You can no longer get credit. You cannot get housing. You can't get government loans to improve your education. And the list goes on. And it seems like if we wanted to help these people, why do we punish them so severely, so permanently?
And it is permanent. They never come out of those prisons as better people. They come out as worse people. And then this whole idea of medical marijuana, denying it to somebody that may get some relief from the nausea of chemotherapy, and the physicians aren't giving them any help, and saying that you're not going to give them freedom of choice. I mean, this is just preposterous. And yet, that's what we have accepted here in this country, and it has not been our tradition. Most Americans aren't aware of that. Most Americans think that, oh, these drugs must have been illegal for, you know, throughout our history. But this is a recent phenomenon, and the insanity of the drug war is just 30 years old.
Yes, sir, it is indeed. Speaking of a bit of insanity, there's a gentleman up in Oregon. His name is Dave Myers, and he was wounded in Vietnam, and he came back with hepatitis C. And, of course, that's a disease that takes 20 to 30 years before the full impact of the disease makes itself known. And he needs a liver. And as it turns out, his physician was giving him Marinol, the synthetic marijuana, and yet the specialist who would do the transplant has decided that he's a pot smoker, and therefore he's going to deny him a liver, in effect handing him a death sentence.
That's the stupidity of it all. Of course, I don't even believe government should be involved in distributing body parts either. And the state, in the federal laws, control all of that now. The old days, we used to have, donating blood was something that you could do, and you could get some money for it. And the market helped, you know, provide us. We never had shortages of blood. But now it's all messed up by state. We have a federal monopoly control over all organ transplants, and that's why there are shortages.
Yes, sir.
You hear of stories like what you've just said.
Yes, sir. I know you follow at least some of the stories in regards to the medical clubs and the DEA attacks on them and so forth.
Right.
And the one out in Santa Cruz, the WAM organization headed by Valerie and Mike Corral, they are the most bona fide, most legitimate of all the clubs. No interstate commerce whatsoever. And yet, last year, with 220 members, the DEA came in, stole their plants just before harvest. And since that point in time, I think 15 of their members have died. And I just wonder, is there a chance that we can take another look at a bill similar to the Rohrabacher bill anytime soon? Is there any way that this 93...
It's not going to happen real soon. Barney Frank and I had a bill in, and it wasn't exactly what came up on the floor with Rohrabacher. It was very similar. I don't think they're likely to bring that up again. They probably didn't, leadership along with the Bush administration, Ashcroft, they probably were pretty annoyed with the whole thing. So my guess is that it's not going to come up soon unless we find a vehicle to put an amendment on some type of appropriation bill under an open rule. That's how this last one came up. They didn't bring that. They didn't allow the bill to come up. That happened to be just an amendment to an appropriation bill. But there may be another opportunity to bring it up as an amendment.
Well, I certainly hope so, sir. If you've met, and I would imagine you have, some of these medical patients, it's a quite legitimate need, and it's a quite legitimate medicine for so many of them. And they deserve respect, I think. I'll tell you what, sir, I'm going to take just a 30-second break, and we'll be right back. Anybody out there who disagrees with what we're saying, it is you I want to hear from today. Please give us a call, 713-526-5738. And we'll be back in 30 seconds.
Basically, the idea is to change political consciousness in this country so that our children, hopefully our children and certainly our grandchildren, look back on the drug wars of the last few decades and of today with the same sort of distaste and contempt and even horror that we look back today on the Jim Crow laws and the slavery in our own nation's history.
Ethan Nadelman.
Executive Director, Drug Policy Alliance, drugpolicy.org.
Okay, I want to bring up the U.S. prison population, Congressman. The study came out of the New York Times on July 27th saying we just went up 2.6% more to a total of 2,166,260 Americans in jails, state, and federal prisons. And isn't that an enormous waste of money, sir?
It sure is, especially if you could make it so that at least half of them or more wouldn't even need to be there. That it's unnecessary. I mean, we have to have some prisons, and you can't ever get rid of them all, but there would be a tremendous decrease if you just gave up on the war on drugs.
Yes, sir. Indeed. We drive so many people to desperation from being arrested one time to being a three-time loser and put away for life in some cases.
Right. Minimum sentence laws are just horrendous.
Another one from the New York Times. An estimated 12% of African-American men aged 20 to 34 are in jail or prison. One out of eight black men of that age. And it's...
Yeah, but, you know, like we just mentioned a little while ago, you know, the black leadership in the Congress, you'd think they would see the direct connection, but not necessarily. They see it and claim it's just, you know, prejudice. But we so often can see that it's the poor that are being, you know, sucked into this system because of the drug laws. And this, you know, is such a temptation for them to be taken in if they're poor and live in the inner city. So it would be a tremendous improvement, you know, if we could, you know, get the feds out of the business and reform the drug laws at the state level.
Okay, Congressman, we do have a gentleman online. I'm not so sure he disagrees with us. Let's see what he has to say. Tom from Pearland says he wants clarification on other drug laws. Tom, are you there?
Yes.
Yes, Tom, real quick.
Yes. Hello, yes. Dean, thanks. Enjoy your program. I've listened to your program several times, and I'm really not sure where you stand on drugs generally. I know where you stand on marijuana, particularly medical marijuana, and I'm all in agreement with the legalization of marijuana for those purposes, even for recreational purposes. But you talk about drugs in a very general way, and I don't know whether you're for legalization of cocaine, heroin. You know, I just sort of can you clarify that, please?
Okay, Tom, thank you very much. Go ahead, Congressman.
Well, I myself would get the feds out of it totally and completely and have no federal laws against it. I don't think many of the laws do any good, even with the hard drugs. And I was reading something the other day, was real interesting. And when Bob Hope died, they went back to find out what the country was like in 1903, and they went and found an advertisement in a drugstore for opium advertising how it could be used. It was just sold over the counter. It was no big deal. And incidentally, they mentioned that there were 250 murders that year in the country. So the country was very, very peaceful, law-abiding compared to what we have today. And you could walk in and buy all the opium that you wanted over the counter. So I would say, you know, forget about the federal government. Treat it more like alcohol. And, there needs to be plenty of warnings, but... Because I think drugs are dangerous. Matter of fact, I don't like them at all, you know. But I also respect the people who need them, such as in the medical sense, and others who want to abuse it. I don't want to. I can help educate as a physician and as a parent and a grandparent. But I would have very, very few laws. But if a state decide to have it, I think the state should have the prerogative of doing it.
Yes, sir. I would tend to agree with that. And just to respond to the caller right quickly, I say the day that we legitimize the use for adults is the day we destroy the drug wars, the drug cartels' stash, the day we end most of the reasons for the street gangs, and we eliminate the job for the street corner vendor who wants to sell to our kids.
Overnight, it would be gone. Just like when Prohibition hit, you know, when the amendment was passed, they said within an hour, because everybody knew it was coming.
Yes.
The bootlegging began. I mean, they were, it was arriving through Canada and all over within an hour. And of course, as soon as the laws are repealed, there would be such a dramatic change, because the drug czars would be gone in minutes.
Yes, sir. They would lose. They'd be working at Jack in the Box.
Right.
Yes, sir. We just got a couple minutes left, and I kind of wanted to just give you the option. If you want, is there something you'd like to say to us fellow Texans here about the war of terror or the lack of weapons of mass destruction? Where are we headed with this crazy war on terror?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think it looks too good. Outside of Washington, I'm a little bit more optimistic than I am when I'm in Washington. Last week, we had a vote on repealing portions of the Patriot Act, and they passed overwhelmingly.
Hurrah.
And it was done not so much that the congressmen who voted for all this stuff got wise, but they were getting a message back home. A lot of cities and towns and states have passed resolutions that, even with the fear and the concern about terrorism, they're saying, you guys have gone too far. So in that sense, I'm optimistic. The American people aren't sound asleep. I give a lot of credit to radio shows like this, as well as the Internet, where we can get our information out. I just spend no time or effort trying to influence the 3-4 major networks. And I just try to get the information out through what I do in the Congress and through my website. And fortunately, we're still allowed to do that. So I think we have to keep plugging along. And one of these days, we're going to have some big victories.
Yes, sir. I agree with you, and it's knowing that there's people that represent our interests, like you in Congress, that keep me living in the States, because otherwise I might be in Vancouver.
Well, all I do too is to urge all those listeners to make sure they let their congressmen know, because they're political animals, and they will respond politically when they know that the people want something. So. The fact that we did have that vote on marijuana, we did pretty well. Next go around, we'll have more if the congressmen aren't afraid of any retaliation by their constituents.
Oh, well, Congressman Paul, I want to thank you so much for being with us. We're just about out of time, and I hope you'll come back and see us again real soon.
Good to be with you.
Yes, sir. Okay, folks, we have determined that it is going to be a hero of the week, and let's go ahead and run that track, Steve.
In recognition of their outstanding achievements in the field of drug reform, Cultural Baggage is proud to announce the Hero of the Week.
Today's Hero of the Week is from New Jersey. In fact, he calls himself NJ Weed Man. His name is Ed Forshin, and he stands for free speech. He got himself arrested the other day for holding a sign that basically called his prosecutor a hypocrite. He got 3 charges for that, driven away from the federal building. Anyway, folks, next week our guest will be Joffrey Guy, the head of GW Pharmaceuticals, as well as Ed Byrne from Patients Out of Time. Please send me an email, dean@cultural-baggage.com. I want to hear from you, your ideas on Hero and Coward of the Week. And I think that's about it. I hope you'll join us next time here on Cultural Baggage. For my technical producer, Steve Nolan, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. KPFT, Houston.